You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for listening. So shoppers flooded grocery stores last week, overflowing their carts, preparing for the spread of COVID-19, the possibility of staying home for weeks. Experts recommend stocking at least 2 weeks' worth of food, which might be easy for some people, but it's extremely challenging for others. COVID-19 could worsen inequities. We're talking about personal finance amid a global pandemic. What are you worried about financially? What do you want to know about how to stay within your budget and still be prepared? We're at 800-642-1234. Emily Guy Birkin is a money coach and retirement expert. She's the author of a number of finance books, and her most recent one is called End Financial Stress Now: Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. Emily, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we saw yesterday the Federal Reserve cut short-term interest rates to zero. What does that mean for us?
So for a lot of people, that is, for a lot of normal folks, that's not going to mean much of anything. In general, cutting that rate is an attempt to help the small businesses who are really struggling under this COVID-19. For individuals, it's, this is the sort of thing that might prompt people to think about refinancing their mortgage to get the better rate. And obviously that 0% rate does not mean that you can refinance your mortgage with 0% interest. Yeah, I know, it's disappointing. That is the starting point for banks to determine their rates. So yes, it will mean a better rates are available depending on your credit, but it does not mean that you can refinance and pay cash.
Right. I mean, refinancing isn't for everyone, too, because you have to look at how long you might be staying in that house, and you have to look at, whether the costs of refinancing actually outweigh what you'll see in that monthly mortgage payment.
Exactly. Yes. So at any point, refinancing a mortgage is a cost-benefit analysis that you have to go through. You know, maybe you'd get a lower monthly payment, but you'd extend the horizon of when you'd be able to pay off your mortgage, which if you're in your 30s or 40s, that's not necessarily a big deal. But if you're in your 50s or 60s and you're, looking towards retirement at some point, re-upping a 30-year mortgage might not be something you want to do, even if it does lower your monthly payments. So these are the sorts of things that people are going to need to be thinking about. And while I understand why the Fed cut those rates, and I think, again, these kinds of decisions for small businesses are definitely going on behind the scenes, for most normal people, this is not going to make much of a difference in your financial choices that you're making during this crisis, just because people are focusing on getting to the next day, getting to the next week, and thinking about the kinds of long-term decisions you need to make are not necessarily top of mind. So that's what's going to be happening with this Fed rate cut. Most people are not really going to see much of a difference for themselves.
Emily, the Fed did this presumably to help avoid a recession. Is there a recession looming? And what does that mean for us normal people?
So the bad news is, I think it's pretty much inevitable that we're going to have a recession. For people who work in finance, we have been expecting one for quite some time now. We have a kind of a cycle of within every about 7 years, we see a recession every 7 to 10 years. And it's been about that long. It's been actually a little bit longer since the recession that was triggered by the 2008 housing crash. So my colleagues and I have very much been thinking there's going to be a recession. We don't know necessarily what's going to trigger it. None of us thought, global pandemic.
Right.
That sounds kind of science fiction-y. So I think that it is kind of inevitable that we are going to be having a recession. Now, having said that, I don't want people to panic. there is a cycle to these larger economic forces, which does not necessarily mean it has to touch individuals. So what individuals can do in order to prepare themselves and ride out this potential recession, which again, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, just because this is what I expect doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen. But in order to ride out this potential recession, the best thing that you can do is shore up your own financial choices, your own financial life. Plan ahead as much as you can. And if all you can plan ahead for is tomorrow, that's better than not planning ahead at all. So plan ahead as much as you can to be ready for if you might have some job loss or a gap in income or anything like that. Plan ahead for what you could do now to improve your chances of being able to find another job, maybe work, find a way to get additional income streams coming in, that sort of thing, so that when the next recession hits, whether that is coming within the next 12 months or the next 12 years, when the next recession hits, you are in a situation where you can ride it out and let that be just a blip in your financial life rather than something that is truly overwhelming for you.
We're talking with Emily Guy Birkin, a financial coach and retirement expert. We're looking at personal finance amid COVID-19. Taking your questions through the hour, 800-642-1234. What are your personal finance questions right now? Are you close to retirement and wondering if you have all your financial issues straight right now? Or are you thinking that you may have to postpone retirement looking at the current state of the economy? Join in with your concerns, your questions, 800-642-1234. So, Emily, let's look at the stock markets. They've been really unstable. They've dropped since COVID-19 unfolded. How should we be reacting to this volatility in the markets?
So, in general, I would say don't react. When you invest, the goal is to invest for the long term. And because that is because investing for the long term smooths out this kind of volatility. The roller coaster that we're riding right now will come back up again. So right now, it's really scary checking on your 401k balance, checking on whatever your investments are. It can, gives you heartburn, makes you feel like I should just take it all out and bury it in the backyard. And that is a very natural reaction. Human beings are not well equipped for dealing with this kind of uncertainty. Like, that's just not the way our brains are wired. However, the best possible reaction is no reaction. Leave your money where it is and just decide not to look at your investments until things have stabilized somewhat. And that's because, for one thing, it will be better for you individually. For another, it will be better for the market as a whole if we all decide, I am not going to let the panic make me sell off and do that, because the more people panic and sell off, the more people panic and sell off, which causes the stock market to dip even more and more. So staying the course without getting overwhelmed is exactly the way to make sure that both your finances and the economy as a whole recovers more quickly.
We're talking with personal finance author Emily Guy Birkin for the hour. She's taking your money questions. Is your family feeling financial strain? What questions do you have about investing during this time of a pandemic? Do you have an emergency cushion, or have you tried to build one up in the past? How is your reserve doing? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in a moment with Emily Guy Birkin, right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for a personal finance conversation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The ongoing spread of the new coronavirus has become one of the biggest threats to the global economy and financial markets. Fear surrounding the impact of COVID-19 on the global economy has hurt investor sentiment. It's caused a sell-off in stock markets. What are you thinking about your retirement fund right now? Are you nearing retirement and concerned you may need to put it off? Or are you deciding to speed up retirement plans in case someone in your family falls ill? Do you have a pandemic plan? We're at 800-642-1234. Email your money questions to ideas@wpr.org. Personal finance author Emily Guy Birkin stays with us. Let's take a call now. Rob is with us from McGregor, Iowa. Hi, Rob. What's on your mind?
Hi there. So I'm coming off of a bankruptcy about 8 years ago, along with a divorce, so kind of got financially ruined. I'm looking at getting back into the market and investing, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of investment is best for me. But wondering, with this dip in the economy, is now the time to put money into the stock market with it being so low?
Rob, thanks for the question. Emily, what would you say there, coming out of bankruptcy 8 years ago and looking to invest right now?
I would say someone who has the money to be able to invest and who also has the stomach for it right now is a good time to invest. You will see a lot of financial experts saying things like, oh, stocks are on sale right now, which is true. Unfortunately, that also can make people feel a little queasy. but yes, now is actually a very good time to invest. I like to recall what Warren Buffett says, which is you should be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. Now, I don't particularly like that terminology. It's very negative, the idea of greedy and fearful. But it is a good thing to remember that when people are feeling scared about their investments, that's usually a good indication that it's a good time to invest. Now, as for what type of investment that Rob would best be served with, that depends a little bit on what his needs are, what his time frame is. So if he is investing for retirement, depending on how far out he is, and depending on how much personal control he'd like over his investments, my answer might be different. In general, I recommend that people invest in index funds. And yes, I know the index is not doing very well right now. But again, that means that it is quote unquote on sale, meaning your money will go farther over time investing now than it would if you had invested 3 weeks ago even. And so that's my general recommendation for people is to, for those who are not going to be keeping an eye or not necessarily playing the market, go for index funds because that is a set it and forget it kind of investment.
Looking at that long horizon table.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Rob, thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't know. Emily, go ahead.
Yes, sorry. The only caveat that I would give to Rob is if he is within 1 to 5 years of retirement, that's when things are going to get a little bit more complex because if he is within 1 to 5 years of retirement, depending on the direction the market goes over the next 12 months, over the next couple of years, he may want to consult with a professional to help him figure out what's going to be the best place for his money to make sure that he is on track to retire at the time that he'd like.
Rob, thanks. We're talking with Emily Guy Birkin, a financial coach and retirement expert. She is taking your calls, your personal finance questions through the hour at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Nancy now, joining us from Superior. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Thanks for this conversation. I appreciate it.
Sure.
My question is, I'm currently under a construction loan with my home. It to be maturing in July. I'm wondering, with the low interest rate drop, would it be more advisable or of my interest to switch into and my construction loan, which I'm only paying interest on currently, and go to my full mortgage with these incredible interest rate drops?
I think that that could potentially work out well for you. That's the sort of thing where it would all depend very much on the specifics of what interest rate that you were able to qualify for based on your credits and also what your lender is offering. But it is something that is worth looking into. It won't hurt you any to do the research to find out exactly what interest rates your lender is offering with this change in the interest rate from the Fed, and it could potentially save you quite a bit of money. There are a number of calculators that can help you figure out once you know what interest rate is available to you. Now with this change, to help you figure out exactly how much you would save, how much you would spend with various different options. So I would definitely recommend looking into it as a possibility.
Nancy, thanks. Yeah, crunch the numbers. We heard here from Anne and Madison called, couldn't stay with us, but wants to know, Emily, how safe are our funds right now currently in banks? How secure are the banks?
So the banks are under FDIC insurance, so which means that up to $250,000 in any one bank is secure. The FDIC has been around since after the Great Depression, and so that is something that allows us to feel safe with our money in the banks. So you do not need to worry about your money in the banks. This is not going to cause something like what happened in the 1930s. So your money is perfectly safe.
How should we go about looking at our emergency fund right now, if we even have one?
So your emergency fund could be very, very important in the coming weeks and months, depending on the way COVID-19 goes and what that means for our economy. So if you have an emergency fund, do not be afraid to tap into it if you need to. And again, the difference between there's something that you want to have that you're used to having but you don't need, probably not a good idea to tap into your emergency fund. If it's something that you need to, you know, keep a roof over your head, keep the lights on, it's a good idea to tap into it. Now, if you don't have an emergency fund, that can be very overwhelming in a situation like this, but that does not mean that you are without resources. So even if you do not have an emergency fund, right now, start to think through what you have that is valuable. Now, that could mean literal assets that you could sell. So if you've got a television set that you could sell, if you've got a second car that you could sell, things like that. Now, this is a very uncomfortable exercise, but it is much better to go through this now when you don't need to, so that if it comes to that where you do need to sell one of your assets to be able to keep things going, you have already been through the thought process of what you would need to do to sell it. In addition, there are other assets you might have that you might not think about. I see a lot of times people will get in trouble financially and they will go to things like payday loans, or they'll take a loan from their 401k, which is not advisable, and then get themselves into worse trouble. And then they'll eventually turn to someone like their mother-in-law or something like that, who would have helped them earlier, but they, because of their pride, felt like they couldn't. And so it is better to think about, like, if I were absolutely at the end of my rope, who could I turn to? What could I do? And rather than wait until that point, ask for that help earlier. And yes, it does not feel good, but in general, people want to help, and you will feel better about not digging a deeper hole before having to go to that person.
And then also, you know, find the little things that are just adding up in your budget that you're not using right now. Maybe that gym membership that could be taken off that subscription to whatever it is that could be done away with right now.
Oh, absolutely. When all of our budgets have fat in it. And when we think about cutting costs, we often think about the really tough ones. We imagine that going on a budget, trying to cut things from our expenses, we imagine it'll look like the real world in the Matrix, where everyone's, you know, wearing holy clothes and eating only oatmeal. But that's not the case. I think that it's much better start with the easiest stuff to cut and move to the more painful. rather than the other way around. So for the things that are easy, so for instance, I belong to a gym that I have not been to, and I am very not proud to say this, in about 4 months, I could cut that expense very easily. And that would not in any way affect my day-to-day life, and it would give me the extra money each month. So those are the sorts of things. Think through what money is going out that you are not seeing value from, and that is a way to find extra money within your budget.
And really quickly here before we go to break, we're seeing shoppers buying in bulk, you know, buying a lot of food, other necessities. Should we be buying in bulk right now?
If it is something that is already in bulk, I'd say go for it. You see a lot of people who are panic buying all the toilet paper, all the Purell, and that is not helpful either for your particular situation or the society as a whole. So yes, go ahead and buy in bulk when it's something that already comes in bulk. If you have the money to do that, that's not necessarily a bad idea in case you are unable to leave, in case you get sick or anything like that. However, panic buying is not going to be helpful to you or to anyone else. So it's one of those make haste slowly things, you know, buy in bulk without panicking.
We're talking with retirement and finance specialist Emily Guy Birkin. Through the hour, you're pressing money questions, 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're tackling your money questions through the hour as many families face economic stress in the face of COVID-19. How are you coping with your money situation? Do you have the luxury of working from home, or is your job dependent on going and clocking in? Is your job facing elimination or being scaled back? How are you preparing for this financially? Did you have an emergency fund for something like this? Join in through the hour. Your money questions front and center, 800-642-1234. Emily Guy Birkin has written a number of finance books. Her latest one is about financial stress and budgeting, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now with Mark joining us from Madison this morning. Hi, Mark.
How's it going?
I'm doing well. Can you, what's on your mind here?
Well, here's my question, I'll wrap it up in a real quick way. I'm a owner of a 80 some acre farm. It's all paid for. Everything I have on my place is all paid for as far as vehicles and everything. I have no loans. I've been working construction for over 30 years, about 31, 32 years now. And I have a pension through the labors that will be coming when I want to draw it. So now at the age of 55 or thereafter. So depending on that amount, now I know the health insurance that it'll cost me to continue my health insurance kind of as my secondary insurance someday will be about $600 a month, roughly, that I kind of project right now. So, and then in my savings account, I have, you know, just shy of under $15,000 in savings. So, my projection on my health, my pension, I'm thinking between $35,000 to $4,000 a month. Is there any way I can invest more? And what's a good way to put more money away? Whether it's in a 401k, whether I do it in the stock market, or which is the best way to make money quick, put it that way. Not to be greedy.
Sure. Mark, thanks.
You know?
Yeah.
So, Mark, there is no such thing as making money quickly. Unfortunately, that's gambling. however, you are in a very good situation, it sounds like, in that you know that you can expect a pension. You have a healthy emergency fund. You know what to expect in terms of health insurance. So you are very much sitting pretty. And so what I would recommend for someone in your situation is to actually invest for the long term. Invest like you are a 20-something. And here's what I mean by that. You are going to be retiring at some point, sooner rather than later, it sounds like. However, you are theoretically going to be retired for quite a long time. And so a lot of times we think of investing for retirement as having like this end date at which point everything falls off a cliff, except that you can stay invested even after you have retired and have money set aside and growing in an investment. And if you have access to a 401k, I think that that's a great idea. If not, an IRA is a very easy way to invest without the access to the 401k. And invest for a long time horizon, for money that you do not intend to access until you are in your 70s or 80s or later. So with that, you could do something like put money aside in a target dated fund. With target dated funds, they are set up so that there is a date at which point you are hoping to access that money. And if you set the time horizon out later for when you're 75, then it will have more aggressive investing now because you have time to ride out the market volatility and then slowly switch to things that are more stable as you get closer to that target date. And so that's something that I would recommend so that you are not thinking about increasing the money for right when you retire, but increasing your cushion for once you are older and well into your retirement. And at that point, since you'll likely be on a fixed income, having that cushion that has grown through your early retirement will really give you a lot of peace of mind and make sure that it can smooth over any rough edges you might find from the pension, the cost of health insurance, and those other things.
Mark, thanks so much. Let's go to Christina now, joining us from Glenwood. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I've got an important personal question and a quick comment if time. I'm 62 and I'm refinancing my home at 3.25% with a cash out of over $100,000 that I plan to save for repairs or unexpected or home improvements, and I'm wondering where can I safely put this money until needed?
Oh, okay. That's a great question. So I would recommend there are a couple of different options for you. You could always put it in savings. That would be safe. It's not going to get you much in the way of interest. If you are simply concerned about stability, that could be a great option. And I would suggest looking to find what savings accounts have the best interest rates. Other options include a money market account. If you don't anticipate touching that money, a money market account could be a really good touching that money unless and until you need it. I mean, could be a good option. There are restrictions on how many withdrawals you can make from a money market account per month, which is why if you anticipate needing it sooner, a savings account might be better. But you are going to get a better interest rate on a money market account if you're hoping to earn some interest on this. But you do have several very safe places to put it. The $100,000 is well below the FDIC insurance amount of $250,000. And so, and I think that it's very smart having that money set aside for the things that you might need to do for your home and taking care of those repairs.
Emily, explain what a cash out situation is, how it arises.
So with a refinance, what you can do, basically, you are getting a new mortgage on your home. The cash out is you are tapping some of the equity that is already in your home and cashing out on that when you are doing the refinance so that your new mortgage will be for the amount minus that equity that you cash out.
Christina, does that help?
It sure does. And then if I may, that quick comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a friend, he's a multimillionaire who always says he knows how to make money. And he said he is buying a lot of stocks because he said you buy low and you sell high.
Christina, thanks so much. Emily, what about that sentiment?
He's absolutely right. The reason why I hesitate to recommend that is that it takes a very specific type of personality to be able to do that with the stock market. There's a reason why there are some people who are able to be multimillionaires investing in the stock market and all of that. And it's most of us are more likely to be like, oh, this isn't working, if after you buy, it dips low again, which is always possible. So I think that it's easier for people to simply have a regular contribution they do every month without necessarily trying to time the market.
Talking with Emily Guy Birkin, a financial coach and retirement expert. She's written a number of books, most recently End Financial Stress Now. We're looking at your financial situation, gathering your questions, your tips, 800-642-1234. Emily, we heard from Rachel about debt. Millions of Americans have credit cards with an average of $8,000 in credit card debt. Rachel called from West Bend, couldn't stay with us. She wants to know if we should be focusing on paying down our debt first as opposed to saving money in the next 2 to 6 months.
If you can do both, I would say do both. We often have this kind of binary thought about debt that, you know, you can't start saving, you can't start investing until you have paid off your debt. And it's understandable why we tend to do that is we think, well, I've only got so much money. I want to get the debt done before I start setting money aside, before I start investing. However, you can do both, and I think that it is smart to do both. And particularly in an unprecedented situation like this, I think it is smart to make sure that you have a cash on hand cushion. And by cash on hand, I mean set aside in savings in an emergency fund, even while you are working on your debt, just because this COVID-19 is unprecedented. I have never seen anything like it. No one has. So we don't know exactly what to expect. And so it's always good to have a cushion, an ability to withstand a shock financially. And if you are focusing only on paying off your debt, you may not be able to build that cushion.
What would you say about right now opening up new lines of credit or opening a credit card? Is that a viable short-term solution?
That can be a viable short-term solution for those who don't have necessarily any other options for how to survive, you know, this maybe being laid off or going unpaid for an unpaid furlough or anything like that. I would say that's at the bottom of the list, and go through your other options before you get there. But yes, that is a possibility for those who don't know how they're going to be paying for groceries, how they're going to, you know, pay their utilities or rent during this very strange time.
We're talking with Emily Guy Birkin. There's still time for your money questions. Emily's a personal finance and retirement expert. Have you reached out to your bank about potentially overdrawing or missing a mortgage payment? What are your creditors telling you about this moment with a global health pandemic? Are they being more flexible about when you pay your bills? Have you reached out to any creditors? Share your stories, your questions, your tips. Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Emily Guy Birkin right here on the Ideas Network. The morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Some banks are offering relief to customers affected by coronavirus. During a crisis, some banks do fee waivers or refunds, change due dates, or extend credit lines. Have you talked with your bank about your financial situation? What financial challenge do you face right now as your family prepares for COVID-19? We're at 800-642-1234. Personal finance author Emily Guy Birkin stays with us. Let's take another call now. John is with us from Glendale this morning. Hi, John.
Well, hello. Excuse me, I'm hands are wet. Hi, I was calling because I'm 73, and I know I haven't checked, but I know my 401k is probably taking a hit. It's about 400 grand. What I was wondering is, once it builds up again, hopefully, once it builds up again. Should I move all my funds into money markets to avoid this kind of problem in the future?
John, yeah.
Taking my age into consideration.
73, Emily.
That's a great question. And no, you should not move all of it to money market. What I would recommend instead is having kind of a staggered system for your money. So you want to keep some money continually invested in longer term. You know, at 73, you still have potentially a good 30 years left. So you want money to still be there once you're at that, you know, in your 90s, in your early 100s. And so instead of moving all of it, I would suggest having a rebalancing each year where you move some of your money into money market funds, and that's what you'll live on for the next year or year to 3 years, while you still allow the bulk of your money to grow. And so that way you get the best of both worlds. You get the stability and the fact that it is there with having your money in the money market funds for what you're going to be living on over the next year to 3 years, but you still get that long-term growth and the ability to bounce back from these sorts of dips without feeling like you're going to be hamstringing your future self by taking money after things have already been down.
John, thanks. Let's bring in Paul now, joining us from Middleton. Hi, Paul. What's your question?
Good morning to you both. Well, I'm kind of perplexed by the fact that since 2000, this is our third recession that we're probably going to have. And in the market of the housing bubble, the market lost 54% of its value. My point is, did the market come back? Yes, it did. Did it gain all of 54% back? Yes, it did. Did it make more than that 54%? Yes, it did. So what is the point is, for us small investors who have 401ks or 457s or whatever the case may be, is that we just continue to do our every 2 week of putting money into the market using dollar cost averaging. We're not multimillionaires who can sit like Warren Buffett or Mayor Bloomberg or Soros and do these speculations and have plenty of cash on the side. We can only go through and do what we can do and just hope for the best, which history shows us does happen.
Paul, thanks. Emily, it sounds like your mantra.
Yes, absolutely. These boom and bust cycles, they are what naturally happens with the market. We are able to flatten them out somewhat with regulation. And part of the reason why we have seen these major recessions in 20 years, three in 20 years, it's, you know, theoretically three, we're not necessarily in a recession now, but that's about once every 7 years. Is in part because we have taken away some of these regulations that helped kind of flatten things out, flatten the money curve. What's going on is something that is seen historically prior to when those regulations were put in place after the Great Depression. There were these like giant boom and bust cycles over and over again about every 10 years. So again, what we as individuals can do is, as the caller said, you know, keep putting the money in. The dollar cost averaging, which I'd like to explain for listeners, that is where, let's say you have $100 to invest every month. Some months, and you're buying the same shares every month. Some months, shares cost $10 per share, so you get 10. Some months they cost $1 per share, so you get 100. What that means is you have fewer of the high cost shares that are going to go down, and more of the low cost shares to go up. So by dollar cost averaging, by putting that contribution in month out, you are going to do better off because you are not trying to time the market. You are simply letting your money do whatever it can do.
We're talking with Emily Guy Birkin, a financial coach and retirement expert. We're looking at our pocketbooks amid this time of COVID-19. Emily, Kathy from Dodgeville sent us an email wondering the pros and cons right now of investing in buying silver or gold.
So oftentimes when there is some sort of crisis, both either nationally or internationally, people will talk about buying silver and gold. And there is a reasonable logic behind that, in that gold is something that you can hold and touch. And so it's, you know, when you are investing in something digital, it feels like, is this real? However, there is a tendency to overvalue silver and gold because of that. Just because it is something you can hold and touch does not mean that it is any more inherently valuable than any other type of investment. The thing to remember about money and anything that we invest in, we are the ones who have decided that it's valuable. So we can decide that gold is not valuable. So I would say investing in gold and silver is not a bad idea, but that should be a portion of your investment strategy. It should not be something that you put all of your money in, nor should it be something that you put a majority or even a large minority of your money in. It is part of a balanced portfolio. It should not be something that you only turn to in a crisis.
Let's bring in Andy now in Denmark. Andy, hi.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was wondering, I have some of my money currently in a bank and some in a credit union. I was wondering if the credit union had the backing by the government, or I should move it all into the bank.
I believe that credit unions are also FDIC insured. I would recommend go to your credit union's website and double check. They will have it very clearly stated whether or not they are FDIC insured. If they are not, then go ahead and transfer.
Andy, thanks. We heard Don from Sockville called in, couldn't stay with us, but Don believes people living with other family members or are married should learn to live on one income as opposed to two. That way, when events like a job loss or a new baby happens or a financial crisis, it doesn't feel as severe financially. Your thoughts there, Emily?
I think that's an excellent idea for any family that is capable of doing that. That's actually exactly what happened with my husband and I when we got married. We lived on his income and we used mine to pay down some debt that we had, which meant that when my eldest son was born, I was able to stay at home. And that's actually how I ended up becoming a financial freelancer. It was something that I could do from home to bring some extra money in, yet still be the primary caretaker. And it was all possible because we had gotten used to living on just my husband's salary. However, not everyone is necessarily able to do that. There are a lot of ducks you need to get in a row. For one thing, if you are trying to make ends meet with very low paying jobs, sometimes both partners' incomes are very much needed just to be able to keep things going. That, I think, should be an excellent goal to work towards. And anything that you do to work towards that goal will also help smooth out these sorts of crises. And so when I say that, what I mean is if you are, you know, need both incomes to make ends meet, working towards paying down your debt on both incomes, working towards reducing your spending on both incomes so that one of those incomes can go farther and you can potentially live on one income, that will all do quite a bit to help you weather these kinds of storms.
Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Emily Guy Birkin is a financial coach and retirement expert. She's the author of a number of books, most recently, End Financial Stress Now, Immediate Steps You Can Take to Improve Your Financial Outlook. A quick note on our programming, we are working to bring you more conversations about COVID-19. We want to answer your questions. You can always call during the live program, or you can leave us a message anytime at 833-424-3327. That number again, 833-424-3327. Coming up, it's the State Capital Report. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.